Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, May 5th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UC Wideout TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a soggy 52 degrees and still pouring here in upstate New York. We're going to need to build an ark soon. It's been almost a month. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Dog Eats Dog, Clones, Humanized Pigs, China, DOD, Georgie Porgy Church, Craig Venter, and Elon Musk. We talked about a lot of very disturbing things yesterday. Started with them rendering our pets into animal food. And apparently that was a practice that was pretty common until the 90s, but there are no laws that prevent companies from doing that. And my horrifying thought would be that if we look deeper, because nobody's really watching that pet food industry, if we look deeper, we would find out that there are some pretty scary things going into the animal food, but not just the animal food, the human food chain as well. And we have covered a lot of different things back through the years, just looking at glyphosate and CRISPRing and some of the different things that they're doing. We looked at clones and how since 2008, it was already approved by the FDA to allow cloned meat to end up into the food chain. It had been considered at that time still overly expensive, and so nobody was really doing it. But the FDA gave a carte blanche and said, hey, you know what, someday when you guys decide that it might be economically feasible to start making clones, don't worry about it. You don't need a label. And it is genetically equivalent to normally born animals, conceived animals. And so you don't need to worry about it there. And that's where we left it. And we found out now that we have Georgie Porgy Church, Craig Venter, the Department of Defense, Smithfield Farms, which is now owned by the Chinese, that are all working on these humanized pigs for organ transplantation. And as a matter of fact, I went back and found that original story that we read from way, way, way back when, so we could kind of take a look at what they had told us originally and how this horrifying consortium that we found out is joining together between Big Pharma and food producers and George Church and Craig Venter. This is a pretty frightening story. And the DOD, it's a pretty frightening story. So the original story about the chimeras came out in January of 2016. So this was about a year and a quarter ago. Human animal chimeras are gestating on U.S. research farms. A new radical approach to generating human organs is now to grow them inside of pigs, or what? They didn't mention these ones yesterday. Sheep. Oh, yeah. And you remember Dolly, Dolly the sheep. She was the first clone way, way, way back. It might have even been in the 80s, maybe the 90s, but that was the 80s in England. But they didn't mention sheep yesterday at all. It was just pigs. We don't have any sheep farmers here, at least that I'm aware of. En masse is the world's largest producer of sheep, but we do pigs. Anyway, braving a funding ban that was put in place by America's top health agency, some U.S. research centers are moving ahead with attempts to grow human tissue inside of pigs and sheep with the goal of creating hearts, livers, or other organs needed for transplant. The effort to incubate organs and farm animals is ethically charged because it involves adding human cells to animal embryos in ways that could blur the lines between species. Now, notice that Reuters story that we read yesterday about Smithfield did not get into any of this detail. And unless you knew who Georgie Porgy Church or Craig Venter were, you didn't know anything much about what the real story was until you got like three quarters of the way down the actual page to kind of maybe connect some dots together if you were paying attention. But this one pretty much lays it all out. So last September, so this would be in 2015, in a reversal of earlier policy, the National Institute of Health announced that it would not support studies involving such, quote, human-animal chimeras until, ding, it had reviewed the scientific and social implications more closely. Now, interestingly, I did not see any type of National Institute of Health stamp or FDA stamp or anything of that on what we read yesterday about Smithfield and the DOD. The DOD was financing a big part of it as well as Big Pharma. So look at that. They have circumvented our regulatory agencies. I'll put quotations around them too, because they don't really protect us for much. But anyway, the agency, and this is the National Institute of Health, in a statement said that it was worried about the chance that animals, quote, cognitive state, unquote, could be altered if they ended up with human brain cells. I joked about the pig kind of standing around having a conversation, playing cards, smoking a cigarette, but they just said this in a story out of MIT Technology Review, quoting something that the National Institute of Health had said. So apparently my little fantasy there was not too out of the ballpark. The National Institute of Health action was triggered after it learned that scientists had begun such experiments with support from other funding sources. So this means like going outside of the food chain, like no government funding, unless of course it's the DOD. Including funding from the California State Stem Cell Agency. So California was funding some of this research. The human-animal mixtures are being created by injecting human stem cells into days-old animal embryos and then gestating those in female livestock based on interviews with three teams, two in California and one in Minnesota. MIT Technology Review estimates that about 20 pregnancies, and this was as of January 2016, so fast forward a year and a quarter, and add the DOD and three big pharma companies, Georgie Porgy Church and Craig Venter, and we got a party, I can guarantee you. But they estimated that as of January 2016, there were about 20 pregnancies of pig, human, or sheep, human chimeras that were established during the last previous 12 months in the U.S., though so far no scientific paper describing the work has been published, and thank goodness none of the animals up until that point were brought to term. The extent of the research was disclosed in part during presentations made at the National Institute of Health's Maryland campus in November of 2015 at the agency's request. One researcher, Juan Carlos Ipsuza Belmont of the Salk Institute, and that is a place that keeps coming up in a lot of these stories, showed unpublished data on more than a dozen pig embryos containing human cells. Another presentation from the University of Minnesota provided photographs of a 62-day-old pig fetus with the addition of human cells that appeared to have reversed a congenital eye defect. The experiments rely on a cutting-edge fusion of technologies, and we found out it was CRISPRing, including recent breakthroughs in stem cell biology and gene editing techniques. And by modifying genes, scientists can now easily change the DNA in a pig or a sheep embryo so that they are genetically incapable of forming specific tissue. And then by adding stem cells from a person, they hope that these human cells would take over the job of forming the missing organ, which then could be harvested from the animal and used for transplant in an operation. We can make an animal without a heart. We have engineered pigs that lack skeletal muscle and blood vessels. While such pigs aren't viable, they can develop properly if a few cells are added from a normal pig embryo. And Gary, this is a cardiologist which leads the Chimera Project at the University of Minnesota, says he has already melded two pigs in this way and has recently won a grant, bing, 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 for $1.4 million from the U.S. Army, ding-a-ling, which funds some biomedical research and will try to grow human hearts in swine. Because chimeras could provide a new supply of organs for needy patients and also lead to basic discoveries, researchers including Gary say they intend to press forward despite the National Institute of Health's opposition. In November 2015, Gary was one of 11 authors who published a letter criticizing the agency for creating, quote unquote, a threat to progress. Yes, mixing animals and humans and becoming the Isle of Dr. Moreau is progress, apparently. That also casts a shadow of negativity against their work. Yeah, well, who's to say that there's anything positive? I just don't see how we could get great. Yeah, let's get a ready organ supply and let's make these animal human monsters. I mean, this is just beyond frightening. The worry is that these animals might turn out to be just a little bit too human for comfort. Say, ending up with human reproductive cells, maybe patches of people hair, or just higher intelligence. He even says it here, we are not near the Island of Dr. Moreau. My sister actually worked on that movie. But science moves fast. The cheetah ate the monkey. And he did. The cheetah got eaten. No, the monkey got eaten by the cheetah during the movie. And the specter of an intelligent mouse stuck in the laboratory somewhere screaming, I want to get out, would be very troubling to people. So thank goodness we're not near that point yet, but we will be soon. And remember, this was over a year and a quarter ago, so we might be already. The chance of an animal gaining human consciousness is probably slim. The brains are just way too different, they say, so don't worry about it, Johnny, and much smaller. But even so, as a precaution, researchers working with farm animal chimeras haven't yet permitted any to be born again a year and a quarter ago. But instead of collecting fetuses in order to gather preliminary information about how great the contribution of human cells to animal bodies would be. Now, this next paragraph really bothered me. I think it was this one. Maybe it was a couple more down the line. Yeah, a couple more. Here, Hiromitsu Nakauchi, a STEM biologist at Stanford University, began trying to make human sheep chimeras this year. He says that so far the contribution by human cells to the animals' bodies appears to be relatively small. If the extent of human cells is 0.5%, he says it is very unlikely that we will get thinking pigs or standing sheep. But if it is large, like let's say 40% or so, then we'd have to do something about that now, wouldn't we? Other kinds of human-animal chimeras are already widely used in scientific research, including quote-unquote humanized mice endowed with a human immune system. Such animals are created by adding bits of liver and thymus from a human fetus collected after abortion, of course, to a mouse after it is born. A new line of research goes further because it involves placing human cells into an animal embryo at its very earliest stage when it is a sphere of just a dozen cells or so in the laboratory dish. And this research sounded to me like where they are now currently in 2017 with some of this pig human mixing, where they were actually mixing them in the embryonic stage, not just like at the beginning here in 2015, 16. They were engineering pigs to not have organs and then trying to create human organs with stem cells. But now they have actually started mixing them, CRISPRing them together, and putting them in a petri dish and then implanting them and getting them to grow. This process called embryo complementation is significant because human cells can multiply, specialize, and potentially contribute to any part of the animal's body as it develops. And we read about those mini brain balls, the creepiest brain balls yet. Remember, they let them grow out of Plutonian stem cells in a petri dish for over a year, and they discovered that those brain cells started to differentiate. So in their original experiments, where they had only let them grow for a short period of time, they were only one type of brain cell. But after they let them percolate for a while, they found that they were finding cells from three or four different parts of the brain, including olfactory senses, i.e. the beginnings of smell that were forming. And it's horrifying. I wonder how far along they've gotten growing these animal-human chimeras in the lab. Because, you know, give it a couple more months and we're going to be seeing some crazy stuff. Now, this was the thing that really freaked me out, though. Get this. In 2010, while working in Japan, Nakuchi used the embryo complementation method to show that he could generate mice with a pancreas. It was made entirely of rat cells. And if this works in rodents, he says, then we should be able to have a pig with human organs. Although Nakuchi was a star scientist in Japan, Japanese regulators were slow to approve his idea for a chimera and a pigman, as critics put it. So by 2013, Nakuchi decided to move to the United States, where no such federal laws, ding, 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 restrict the creation of chimeras. My friend and I were talking about this whole thing the other day, and he's like, this is not legal. They can't be doing this. They will not allow them to do this. And I said, look, I don't think there are any laws against doing this in the United States at all. Just like all the big biotech companies moved headquarters over to here into Research Triangle Park in North Carolina, like BASF. We have Syngenta here. We have Monsanto here. And I know Monsanto, when they merged with Bayer, they were talking about moving overseas. I don't know if they did that. And I'm sure that they still have their big ag experimentation going on in North Carolina. But a lot of those guys moved here because, quote unquote, the U.S. was GMO friendly. Well, apparently the U.S. is chimera friendly as well. Can't even believe it. It's a place like Japan, one of our offshore mad science laboratories, and they wouldn't allow him to mix man and pig. So he moved here because he'd be able to do it, and there were no laws. And Stanford was able to recruit him, no problem, with the help of a $6 million grant from the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, which is a state agency set up a decade ago to bypass political interference from Washington. And I'm sure that was over the stem cell debate from way back when, and Ronnie Reagan and Superman, what was his name? Christopher Reeves. So while the National Institute of Health funding ban does not affect Nakuchi, nope, because he's got $6 million from California to create his pigmen, it has put researchers under pressure to explain the purpose of their work. Nakuchi says, quote, I want to show you some chimeras. When we visited his laboratory at Stanford last month, and this was in 2016, he opened the door to a small, scary room, I'm going to add scary, containing incubators where the chimeric embryos are stored. And because an early embryo is almost invisible to the human eye, the room houses special microscopes equipped with micro needles used to inject the human cells into them. The type of human cells being added are called, look, ding, iPS stem cells. Oh, doesn't this bring it all together so nicely? Made from skin or blood, chemically reprogrammed from a human into more versatile stem cells. Using a Nobel Prize winning formula developed by one of Nakauchi's Japanese colleagues. Nakauchi says that as a matter of convenience, most of these iPS stem cells his team has been placing into the animal embryos are made from his own blood. Since recruiting volunteers involves too much paperwork. I've talked about this dude before. He's one of those mini scientists who seem to be using themselves as guinea pigs in the lab right now. We will need special consent if we were to be injecting these into animals from participants, he says. So I just try to use my own. The word chimera comes from a Greek creature of myth, part lion, part goat, part snake. And Nakauchi says that most people at first imagine his chimeras are monsters too. But he says attitudes change, if he can explain his proposal. And one reason is that if his iPS stem cells develop inside of an animal, the resulting tissue will actually be his, a kind of perfectly matched replacement part. Desperately ill people on organ waiting lists might someday order a chimera or wait less than a year for their own custom organs to be ready. See, we asked that question yesterday, if it would be easier to 3D print stem cells on a scaffold or grow them inside of an animal, and I didn't know what the time frame was, so it appears it's less than a year for your custom organs to be ready. And he says he really doesn't see much risk to society. But before any of that can happen, scientists will have to prove that human cells can really multiply and contribute effectively to the bodies of farm animals. And that could be challenging since, unlike rats and mice, which are fairly close genetically, humans and pigs last shared an ancestor nearly 90 million years ago. And what's odd about that is that, I would have to say maybe 3-4 years ago, there was a big story that came out when they were really getting into sequencing all of the genomes and starting to spin out a lot of this genome research and databasing. And one of the things that the story had talked about, not this one, this was another one from, like I said, 3-4 years ago, they had shown how close pigs and humans actually were. We were only a couple strands difference, I think. Maybe it was like 99% of our DNA was almost the same. So notice they don't even mention that. They just mention that our last ancestor was nearly 90 million years ago. But they don't say, but yeah, but we are still pretty close, which is why we're using pigs in some of this research. To find out, of course, researchers in 2014 began impregnating farm animals with human animal embryos, says Pablo Ross, a veterinarian and developmental biologist at the University of California, Davis, where some of the animals are being housed. And we read about University of California, Davis with some of the genetically modified cattle. And I don't remember if they were doing cloning there as well. But they were already messing around with doing some strange things with animals down there at UC Davis. One of the things was to be able to take longhorn cattle and be able to make their horns short and maybe even remove them genetically with CRISPR so they could fit more of them into a, packing crate to put onto train cars and ship them around. Good old Manet Napolitano, remember, is president of the California University System now. Ross says at Davis, he is now transferred about six sets of pig-human embryos into sows in collaboration with the Salk Institute and established another 8 or 10 pregnancies of sheep-human embryos with Nakauchi out of Stanford. Another 36 pig transfers have also taken place outside of the U.S. And see, outside of the U.S. is where I start to really get worried, because there is no regulatory agency, no eye in the sky, and not that we want any more surveillance or anyone telling us more what to do, but I hate to say it, over in China, we got some pretty scary things going on, and that is outside of the public purview. Japan, like I said, that is another mad science laboratory offshore. That's where they were creating those flying vaccinators out of mosquitoes, remember? And then, of course, we have India. India is another good offshore where there's lots of sprinkle funding from our institutes and potentially even governments. That was where they were going to use these iPS stem cell mini brain balls to bring back brain dead. But it was eventually stopped, at least for now. And then, of course, Israel, where we have this big neurological collaboration going on between scientists for all kinds of brain research and different surveillance technologies going on there as well to be used on the American people. And when you start looking at the landscape of what is going on here, just below what people tend to understand, I mean, stuff like this, they're like, oh, this is hard, stem cells, I don't understand, so they don't even read it. But if they even understood one drop of what we were talking about here and some of the things that are going on, mixing and matching, I mean, this is just so against all kinds of different ethics across the board, whether it's just as a human, if it's from a religious perspective, if it's from a scientific perspective, if it's from a futurist perspective. I don't see how anyone could really be behind these technologies being done in secret laboratories without big public eyeballs watching exactly what's happening. And of course, then we find out we have funding from the DOD going into this. And we have all these biopharma companies. And now, of course, like I've talked about before with the 21st Century Cures Act, it is anything goes in the name of medical research to try and cure you. This is beyond scary to me. These early efforts aren't yet to make organs, and that was again in 2016, but to, quote, determine the ideal conditions for generating human-animal chimeras. The studies at Davis began only after a review by three different ethics committees, and even then, he says, the university decided to be cautious and limit the time the animals will be allowed to develop to just 28 days. Well, thank goodness. And a pig is born in 114, so not quite yet. We don't have them, or at least in 2016. But by then, the embryonic pig is a half inch long, and that's developed enough to check to see if human cells are contributing to its rudimentary organs. We do not want to grow them to stages we don't need to, since that would be way more controversial. My view, and this is Ross that we were interviewing, is that the contribution of human cells is going to be minimal, maybe 3%, maybe 5%. But what if they contributed to 100% of the brain? What if the embryo that develops ends up being mostly human? Well, don't worry. It's something that we don't expect. But no one has yet done this experiment, and so we can't actually rule that one out. So there you go. That's where you end that one. And now, like I said, we got Georgie Porgy Church and Craig Venter involved in this project. We found out yesterday, and it is chugging right along. We got Medtronics, which is a biopharma company that's been doing work with DARPA. We've read about them a few times ago. Abbott Labs, as well as United Therapeutics. And they are, United Therapeutics is involved directly with Ventnor and some of his projects. Now, Craig Ventnor, this is a brand new story from the end of February. Ventnor has now moved on to a bunch of things since he has mapped the genome, and he was the one behind a lot of that. He is now trying to decode death. Now, like we've talked about before, all these rich tech billionaires trying to defy death, longevity medicine, that is what this is all about. Let's create chimeras for transplants so we can extend the life of humans and rich people, of course. The world's most extreme physical exam starts in the world's plushest exam room, of course, again, for rich people, complete with a couch, a private bathroom, and teeming fruit plates. This will be my home for an entire day. First come the blood tests, vial after vial, and then two 35-minute sessions in an MRI tube, where REM and U2 try to drown out the clanks as the machine takes pictures of my entire body. And that's not mine. This is the author of the story. There is an ultrasound of my heart and a salive niçoise for lunch, a stool sample. Remember, Google watch your poop too. A cognitive test, which flashes letters on a computer screen at a dizzying pace, and then a CAT scan of my heart as well, which originally seemed so over the top for someone of my age that I tried to get out of it. In Vietnam, I used to do autopsies on 18 to 22-year-olds, and a lot of them had cardiovascular disease, says Craig Ventner, the architect of this process, with a shrug before adding ominously, "We find things." The question is, what do you do with it? I had mentioned that yesterday, too, about 3D printing organs. Like, why couldn't they take an ultrasound and just kind of scan your liver and figure out exactly how it's built, how it's made, what the shape is, and then just 3D print it? But it appears that they do ultrasound scans. Yes, it is Craig Venner, the man that in the late 1990s, frustrated by the slow progress of the government-funded Human Genome Project. That was the HGP we talked about. Good old Churchy Porgy Church was involved with as well. Launched an effort that sequenced the human DNA 2 years earlier than was originally planned. Venter was subsequently the first human to have his complete DNA sequenced. And he has not slowed down since. He has sailed around the world in a voyage inspired by Darwin's journey on the Beagle, discovering thousands of new species along the way. And he has created synthetic life. Yes, that was what his claim to fame was. I think he might have actually been the one. He might have actually been the one that came up with those X and Y amino acids to create, quote unquote, the alien life forms that we talked about a while ago. It was already a few years ago. And he also started three companies and was almost a billionaire before he was fired from one of the most promising, which was Celera Genomics. The guy who actually sequenced the human genome was fired from a genomics company. He must have done something bad. But now he is back with the most ambitious project since his historic breakthrough 17 years ago. He has raised $300 million from investors including Celgene and GE Ventures. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, GE, yay. GE was involved with the Manhattan Project and lots of other things. Of course, nuclear reactors, healthcare, all kinds of stuff. For a new firm called Human Longevity that is trying to take DNA information that he helped unlock and figure out how to leverage it to cheat death for years or even decades. Core to this effort is $25,000 for an executive physical branded the Health Nucleus that I am currently taking during this article. And by the way, this author got tested for free. It is certainly very thorough and, to many doctors, precisely the wrong approach owing to all of the false positives. Study after study of various kinds of screening measures has shown that they do more harm than good, says Stephen Nissan, the chairman of cardiology at the Cleveland Clinic. You do a total body MRI, and you're lucky if you don't find something. I, the doctor, does not think that that is good medicine. But Venter scoffs! Ha! We are screening healthy people, he says. And a lot of physicians don't like that, he acknowledges. My response is, hey, do you know that they are healthy? Hey, we use a definition of health out of the Middle Ages. If you look okay and you feel okay, you are deemed healthy. But we have a very different way of looking at people. And, you know, as we're talking about the neural Fitbits for the nervous system being developed by DARPA, and, I don't remember which UC university. Maybe it was Berkeley. Maybe it was Davis. One of them. I think it was Berkeley, UC Berkeley. With DARPA and that Fitbit of the nervous system to be able to, with a grain of sand, be able to monitor what is going on inside of your body, what is going on inside of your muscles. And I also ran across a story yesterday about the wireless neural dust that can also be used to monitor your brain. So put on a seatbelt, people, because they are really pushing for that. Well, good old Craig Venter is moving that right along. Now 70 years old, Venter cites himself. Last year, he underwent his own physical and says that he found prostate cancer, which was removed last November. The man he is called his scientific muse, Nobel laureate Hamilton Smith, 85, found that he had a deadly lymphoma in his lung, and he has also been treated, and Smith says his prognosis is good. The famously gruff Venter is entirely comfortable ticking off the establishment, no matter what the establishment is, and the feeling is mutual. So that might explain how he got fired from a genomics institute. He's kind of ornery, I guess. His DNA breakthrough was one of the greatest scientific accomplishments of the 20th century, yet he never won a Nobel Prize. Academics view him as someone interested in profits over science. He is a very insecure person who compensates by coming across as very arrogant and aggressive, says one former collaborator. Similarly, Venter's discoveries have upended full industries, yet his business track record, including a brief flirtation with billionaire Hood, is checkered, as connections to past backers and bosses have gone up in flames. He has irritated a lot of people, says Harvard genetics professor Georgie Percy Church, who is a Venter fan. And yes, now they're working together on human-animal chimeras. And Churchy says it is quite a pity. Thus, human longevity offers Venter a last chance to square his legacy, awe the scientists, and make billions in the process, all the while shaking up the foundations of a topic that precisely 100% of Homo sapiens have a keen interest in: how and when each of us will die. Venter has displayed potential both achieved and unrealized almost since his birth. He grew up in Millbrae, California, near what was emerging as Silicon Valley, and he had such bad grades that by high school, his worried mother sometimes checked his arms for track marks. The first glimmer of his future success was in swimming. He initially was mediocre, but when a coach sent him home for the summer with tips, his competitive streak kicked in. He spent 3 months training furiously and never again lost a race. Had things been different, I would have been competing for the Olympics, Venter says, but Lyndon Johnson changed that for me with the draft. Swimming unlocked his potential, but Vietnam made him who he was. At 20 years old, he served as a Navy hospital corpsman, triaging troops who came back from battle, including the Tet Offensive, and deciding who would live and who would die was so traumatic that he says he considered suicide and swam far out to sea, intending to drown. He says that he had a change of heart about a mile out after a shark prodded him, but he'd go through Vietnam again, he says, knowing the outcome and what it did to my personal growth. I would force myself to do it again if I had the chance, he says. After he returned to the States, and I mean, this is pretty good because this is giving you an insight into the brain of one of the people that is helping create this next generation of life on Earth that is not going to be like anything that we have ever seen before. And this dude, we're getting inside his head, so we know what makes him tick. After he returned to the States, he went to community college, first then the University of California, San Diego, where he initially wanted to be a doctor, but then he discovered science. So I guess being a doctor is not science. Maybe. Just maybe. Oh, no. Unmute, please. There we go. I had something weird going on with Skype there. He eventually completed his PhD in physiology and then pharmacology. And I can't even believe this, he became a professor at the State University of New York at Buffalo. What? That's where I graduated from in 1976. So he was at UB. And then in 1984, so right before I started there, he joined the National Institute of Health. He went to UB. He taught at UB. At the National Institute of Health, the themes that would define his career locked into place: productivity, perceived greed, and conflicts between pure science and industry money. Using a new technology, he discovered thousands of human genes. The National Institute of Health made the unprecedented decision to patent them in his name, and colleagues blamed Venter, calling him greedy. Nobel laureate James Watson said he was horrified. Venter insists that he was always against the patents, but that the NIH did it anyway. So they patented genes in Venter's name. Human genes, no less. How did they do that? I thought they weren't allowed to do that. Frustrated, he started a not-for-profit institute in 1992 with a unique model, and he raised money from venture capitalists on the condition that he shared his data with a for-profit company called Human Genome Services before he published it. The relationship ended unhappily in 97 because of arguments over data disclosure, with Venter walking away from $40 million in research funding. Here's something I'm wondering. If Venter taught at UB, why have I never seen UB or Buffalo or anybody touting that one of the guys who was responsible for mapping the human genome? And I mean, they're so into all this 21st century cures now at UB. It's really turning into quite a scientific percolator over there, with, of course, the VA hospital right across the street to experiment on veterans. But I'm really surprised that they're not using Venter at all in any of their literature to help promote, like, what a leading edge institution they are. So anyway, this story goes on and on and on. And I don't know if we're going to read all this, because this is almost the whole hour just on Venter. I wanted to get a little bit further, but look, on the sidebar, artificial life, the dream of understanding life well enough to create it from scratch. And this is kind of where we ended it yesterday. We found out it has moved on to the next step of creating the artificial human genome. The dream of understanding life well enough to create it from scratch sounds like something out of Frankenstein, but Craig Venter is getting there, partly using investor funding to do the work. There is no government funding to make a synthetic species, he says. In 2010, he led a team that included his closest lieutenant, Hamilton Smith, and synthetic biology wonderkind, Daniel Gibson. And they synthesized a genome for bacterium, Mycoplasma micheleids, with a slight change. And they inserted the synthetic DNA into a bacterium, and its original genome was destroyed, but the cell functioned, and it had man-made DNA in it. They have since made another bacterium whose genome has been edited to lack any extraneous genes. Researchers thought the bacteria only needed 250 genes to stay alive, and we covered the story, but Venter's team found its germ needed only 473, because nobody knows what 149 of them do, and the resulting genome could be useful for understanding which genes are really important. There have already been commercial applications for this work. Synthetic Genomics Inc. was founded around his company in 2005, and in 2009, ExxonMobil pledged up to $300 million to create algae that can produce a biofuel that is cheaper than gasoline. Other projects involve drug manufacturing, including a project to rapidly prototype experimental vaccines. And this is a lot of this crazy stuff we've been talking about, where they can use cells as bioreactors. And DARPA now is funding a lot of that. up at the Broad Institute with Georgy Porgy Church to help develop assembly lines and production facilities to start pumping out cell lines at an exponential rate. DARPA has also been funding alternative ways to produce vaccinations en masse in quite a hurry using some sort of biomanufacturing. There was another partnership with Johnson & Johnson in a drug research effort with the biotechnology firm United Therapeutics, ding-a-ling-a-ling, to create pig's organs that can safely be transplanted into humans. And then we find out that George Church was the one who was responsible for trying to make them humanized organs. They have also made relatively inexpensive DNA printers. We've read about digital DNA printing that allows bench scientists to easily modify genetic material. It costs between $50,000 and $75,000. But again, that was a few years back. 50 of them have been sold so far. And the chief executive says that in the near term, the addressable market could be worth up to $500 million. So there we go, guys. That lays it all out. So now, of course, we also have the synthetic human genome. We have these pig, human, and it appears sheep, human chimeras that are being developed in the lab. We have Georgy Porgy Church and Craig Venter, the man who was responsible for sequencing the human genome, that are working on these projects. And then, of course, the Department of Defense involved as well. We ended the show yesterday talking about another smarty pants, and that would be Elon Musk and his Neuralink to connect us to the machine with a high-definition, high-speed brain-computer interface. And scientists are now warning of the potential dangers of this. One of the things that I came across yesterday, you know, SpaceX had this launch that they were launching some military satellite the other day. I was thinking about this, you know, good old Elon. He also leases space from NASA for a SpaceX program. And as a part of that agreement, I had read way back, they were exchanging information. He was able to use some brain trust of NASA scientists to help him get this project off the ground. Remember, Obama shut down a lot of the space programs in the public space and said it was going to be third-party companies that were doing it. And Elon stepped right up, but he is right in bed with the feds. Remember, NASA is the yin of the DARPA yang. It's the white side of the dark side. And we discovered that looking at Annie Jacobson, and I don't think I aired that interview yet. But just as I always had suspected, DARPA used to be in charge of space when Sputnik happened from the Russians. DARPA was a part of that whole space race trying to beat the Russians to outer space. And as that program spun out, they decided to create a new organization that would then take all of the space stuff while DARPA focused on military, and that other organization was NASA. So that spun out of all of that. So Musk being in bed with NASA, and I'm sure he's in there pretty well with the DOD, or at least the military intelligence agencies, as he's launching their secret satellites. Experts have revealed that there are potential dangers of neural link brain interfaces by Elon Musk. Neuralink, which is developing high-bandwidth brain-machine interfaces to connect humans to computers, is probably a bad idea. But if you understand the science behind it, and that's what you want to hear, you can stop reading. But this is an absurdly simple narrative to spin about Neuralink, and it is unhelpful when it comes to understanding the role of technology in the world around us and what we might do about it. I mean, guys, this really is where we're headed. This is not at all fantasy. Neuralink is developing a whole brain interface, essentially a network of tiny electrodes linked to your brain that the company envisions will allow us to communicate wirelessly with the world. Now, if you remember, DARPA, of course, has been working on brain implants for quite a while. they've gotten pretty far. So let's just hop right in there with 2 feet forward, good old Elon, and tell us how much of a friend you are and how this is going to be our only way to compete against AI. If you can't beat them, join them. This Neuralink interface would enable us to share our thoughts, fears, hopes, and anxieties without demeaning ourselves with written or spoken language. And one consequence, of course, of this would be to allow us to be connected at the biological level to the internet. Like I said yesterday, Kurzweil must be rubbing his hands together. But it is who would be connecting back with us, and how, and why, and where, and when, that are the real questions. Though his Tesla, through his Tesla and SpaceX ventures, Musk has already ruffled the feathers of some formidable players, namely the auto, oil, and gas industries, and not to mention the military-industrial complex. Wink. These are feathers that mere mortals dare not ruffle, but Musk has demonstrated a brilliance, stubborn persistence, and a knack for revenue generation that emboldens resolve. However, unlike Tesla and SpaceX, Neuralink operates in a field where there aren't many other major players, for now at least, yeah, except for DARPA. But Musk has now fired the starting gun for competitors. And as observed, an eventual neuro revolution will disrupt almost every industry. So, of course, linking yourself to the machine via your brain is another disruptive technology, I guess. There are a number of technological hurdles between Neuralink and its ultimate goal. And there is reason to think that they can surmount these and reason to think that they won't. But while Neuralink may ostensibly be lumped in with another other big AI, big data companies in its branding and general desire to bring humanity kicking and screaming into the brave new world of their making, I won't be there. What it's really doing isn't new altogether. Depending on who you ask, the human story generally goes like this. First, we discovered fire. Then we developed oral language. We turned oral language into writing. And eventually, we found our way to turn it into merchandise printing. And after a few centuries, we happened upon this thing called electricity, which gave rise to telephones, radio, TVs, and eventually personal computers, smartphones, and ultimately the Juicero. Over time, phones lost their cords and computers shrunk in size, and we figured out how to make them exponentially more powerful and portable to fit in pockets. And eventually, we created virtual realities and meddled our sense of reality with an augmented one. But if Neuralink were to achieve its goal, it is hard to predict how this story is going to play out. The result would be a whole brain interface so complete, frictionless, biocompatible, and powerful that it would feel to users just like another part of their cerebral cortex, limbic, and central nervous systems. I think it's going to be neural dust, guys. Again, DARPA. Whole brain interface will give your brain the ability to communicate wirelessly with the cloud, as well as with computers and with the brains of anyone else who had a similar interface in their head. This flow of information between your brain and the outside world would be so easy that it would feel the same as your thoughts do right now. And if that sounds extraordinary, so are the potential problems. First, Neuralink is not like putting an implant in your head designed to manage epileptic seizures or a pacemaker in your heart. This would be elective surgery on healthy people for non-medical purposes. And right there, we are in a completely different ballpark, both legally and ethically. There seems to be only one person who has done such a thing, and it was a bonkers stunt conducted by a Central American scientist, again, using himself as a research subject. He has since suffered life-threatening complications, not a ringing endorsement, but not exactly a condemnation of the premise either. Secondly, because Neuralink is essentially a communication system, there is the small matter of regulation and control, and of course the FCC. And regardless of where you stand on the whole privacy and surveillance issue, One cannot imagine a scenario in which there would be not an endless number of governments, advertisers, insurers, and marketing folks looking to tap into the very biological core of our cognition to use it as a means of thwarting evildoers and to sell you stuff. What's not to look forward to? And if this tech normalizes to such a point that it becomes mandatory, right, mandatory voluntary peer pressure for future generations to have a whole brain implant at birth to combat illegal or immoral behavior, however it is defined, what do you do about that one? And this obviously opens up a massive set of questions that goes far beyond the technical hurdles that might never be cleared. But we should start thinking about them. And of course, there is of course the issue of security as well. We've learned one thing from this era of Internet of Things and smart everything. It means that it is exploitable, whether it is your refrigerator, your TV, your car, your insulin pump, or your brain. Once something is connected to something else, it opens up a means for it to be compromised. So what does this really all come down to? Well, it is this. Across a number of fields, at the intersection of law, philosophy, technology, and society, we are going to need to answer questions that no one has ever yet thought of asking, at least not often enough or for the right reasons, except unless, of course, you've listened to this show. We have faced, are facing, and will face incredibly complex and overwhelming problems that we might not like the answers to, but it may ask good questions early and often, because if we don't, they will be answered for us. Neuralink is probably a bad idea, but the first person who fell into a fire pit was also on fire. And on a long enough timeline, even the worst ideas need to be reckoned with early enough. So wireless implants could monitor your brain. Step right up for your neural lace implant and see what's going to happen, Johnny. It's all going to be in the name of monitoring your mental health and keeping us all safe. Sans eye sensors implants will give feedback from nerve cells. All right, guys. Well, it is Friday. There's going to be all kinds of new shows this weekend because I've already cut them all. Make sure you have an awesome Friday. Be sick of the music.